No, anything else you want about this? Janaki? Perry?
I have a small question about the intention of verse 19.
Yep.
When we were just talking about it, you put it in the context of holding on. And so I'm a little bit confused, because at least the way I read it and the way it penetrated for me, this line, the approbation or the warning is, don't be pompous.
Yes.
And at least it didn't resonate for me as don't hold on.
Don't hold on?
Yeah.
Well.
And so it and actually, Deborah sort of brought up that same point over dinner, that it didn't seem like a taking and sending, an explicit taking and sending verse.
That is, he isn't saying give it away.
Yeah, but anyway, that was my question.
Okay.
About that.
The basically, he's making these two verses do double duty, is one way to look at them. When things are going really badly in our lives, we develop a negative self-image. And when things are going positive in our lives, we develop a positive self-image. Okay? And so, which translates as an inferiority complex and a superiority complex. And that's exactly what the Tibetan says. The don't lose heart is could be translated as don't get depressed. Okay? And don't be pompous. It's the word for pride, proud, arrogant, thinking you're superior. You with me? Okay. Then, what is implicit in verse 18 but is not said explicitly is don't believe any of this. It's just an experience. What is implicit in verse 19 but isn't said explicitly is give it away. You see, you have take into you the suffering and negativity of all beings. That's saying, that's taking, that part is explicit. And the other piece is implicit about not believing it. Whereas here it says, know that the magnificence of existence has no substance. That's the not believing part of it. And I would say that the implicit part of it is give it away. So even though it's not an explicit taking and extending instruction, that's how I would view this. He's making it do double duty. Do you follow?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. And then, George, could you hand the mic down? Julia and who is the other person? Deborah? Okay. Whoever's... Go ahead.
The way that this verse resonated for me was that it was talking about emptiness. Knowing
yes.
that existence has no substance.
That's right.
Which is why I thought it didn't feel like taking and sending to me. It felt like emptiness, and that sent me on a whole trip to verses from the center and Nagarjuna and all kinds of things. But it felt like you had to understand this emptiness in order to be able to have the compassion arise.
I can understand how you take that interpretation. I think it's helpful to remember that the two great themes of Mahayana are compassion and emptiness, and they're not regarded as separate. So wherever you're talking about compassion, you're talking about emptiness implicitly, and wherever you're talking about emptiness, you're talking about compassion implicitly. And that's why I was offering this interpretation is these verses are doing double duty, because he doesn't have enough he's only got four lines, he doesn't have enough space to say both things in both verses. But let's look at this from a practice point of view. which is more helpful to you when you're depressed regarding taking in or you're feeling really badly about things, taking in the suffering of others or regarding your own suffering as empty?
Well, I've not done Tonglen as a practice.
Okay.
I would have to say that regarding my own experience as empty would be more helpful to me.
Okay. Anybody else on that one? Okay.
I have specifically done Tonglen when I was depressed, and for me, it's really, you know, it really cuts through the depression.
Yeah.
The Tonglen does.
Right.
So.
Okay, and in a way that emptiness.
Well, in a way that emptiness doesn't, and yeah. Maybe that could be just be because I don't, you know, I can't feel the emptiness is still somewhat of a concept to me. It's not in my bones. Yeah. So Tonglen gives me something to do
mm-hmm.
that shifts my experience.
Okay. Now let me ask the other question. When you're caught up in how good things are, which is more helpful to you, regarding them as empty or giving them away to others?
Yeah, that actually was my experience, too, is that regarding it as empty, somehow it creates, how can I say this, it's sort of just an immediate...
It opens things up?
Yeah, immediately yeah. Shifts everything without having to do anything in a way. As Kate was saying, in dealing with negative states, doesn't work the same for me either.
Yeah. Now, ideally, or theoretically, either should work in either situation. But I think Tomi Zongpo is actually tapping into something that is deep. Because my own sense, my own experience is that when I'm struggling within myself, I find taking and sending more helpful in... finding a place to be in the experience and not completely caught up in it. And on the other hand, when things are going well, reminding myself, well, this is just an experience, opens it up. So I think he's actually onto something. Even though, I mean, you have in the mind training teachings, suffering is the dance of what is. If you can relate to it that way, fine. But whenever I read that instruction, particularly when I was in a retreat, I just wanted to put a big X through it because I couldn't relate to the suffering. I really couldn't relate to suffering as the dance of what is. Okay, does this make sense to you? Just second job. Julia's next.
Yeah, it does make sense. At this point, though, for me, it just seems more helpful to see everything as contingent, as condition.
Yes.
And once I see that, then I can let go of it, and it's I see the emptiness of nature, and
right.
It's so much.
And what arises at that point?
What arises when I
when you see the open dimension of experience, you aren't attached to it in the same way. What arises for you in terms of how you regard others?
Oh, it's. A lot more equal.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. Because you're moving in the direction of compassion. You're starting off with equanimity right there. And that's all that's important. For some people, their route is going to be through emptiness to emptiness and compassion. For some people, their route is going to be through compassion to emptiness and compassion. It doesn't matter. One isn't more correct than the other. And that's one of the nice things about Buddhism. We have all these different roots. What is important, and this seems to be what you're doing, because you did a lot of work with verses from the center. Yeah, so you trained that in. What is important is that you find a route to emptiness and compassion. You don't stay on the emptiness side, you don't stay on the compassion side, because it's really the union of the two that's essential. Okay. Julia, you had a comment.
I don't know if this is exactly or similar to what Deborah's saying, because I have a sort of different language around it, but what this evoked for me was thinking about the eight worldly concerns.
And go ahead, expand on that, would you?
Well, I was thinking like the first verse is all about blame, loss, pain, and so forth.
Unhappiness, loss, obscurity, and disdain.
Yes.
Yes, contempt, actually. We could also use contempt for disdain.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the second verse was all about the upside. Pleasure, and happy, gain, fame,
and respect. Yeah.
Yes. And but when I was thinking about the second one more than the first verse, what I realized were all of those things were things as you were viewed by other people, and they were not to do with your own experience. And I don't know if that...
Well, desperately ill?
No, I'm talking about I'm talking about fame and praise and being rich. That's with reference to other people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. I'm rich because I've got more money than somebody else. So it was all sort of externally located somehow.
Right.
And I'm just talking about the way I reflected on it and meditated on it, and then it seemed to me that I sort of felt a lot of compassion because so much time is caught up in those activities in life.
And, you may recall that the four minor sufferings of the human realm, not the four major, the four minor sufferings, are trying to get what you don't have. Trying to be with the people you want to be with, trying to avoid the people you don't want to be with, trying to get what you don't have, and trying to keep what you do have. And I remember one of my students, when I had an office in Orange County, I presented them with these, and he said, "This is how I spend my life."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, that kind of took me to compassion. Just
right. Okay.
Reflection.
Okay. John?
Back on giving away happiness as opposed to considering that it's all a dream or ephemeral or whatever. Seems like a much more positive thing to give it away. For instance, if I'm feeling terrific and the day's beautiful and
mm-hmm.
I'm being treated properly, I give it all out is to me something nicer to be doing than just saying, "Hey, you know, really just."
Just an experience.
Yeah.
Well, what you're raising here, if I put this in a traditional context, is it's kind of interesting. We haven't talked much about it, and I think it will come up later in the 37 practices, but might as well move into it right now. There is, in the Mahayana tradition, this phrase in Tibetan, I don't know what it is in Sanskrit, toksok, which means gather the accumulations. That's the usual translation. Tok is an assembly or a group of things, and sok is the verb to gather. And this was a term that came in almost certainly from the large monasteries, which in traditional societies, monasteries were the first banks in the society. It's where the wealth of the society was stored. You can go back in the uh, the surplus from the harvest, all the peasants paid tribute to the monastery, and so they stored up this large amounts of grain so that when there was famine, they could redistribute it to people. Now, the idea here is by the two accumulations, two gatherings, and I really don't like these translations, but these are old translations, are merit and wisdom or pristine awareness. And you gather merit by doing good. And what this does is it increases the propensity in you for being able to do virtuous activity, but it also leads to a clearing of mind because you feel lighter and clearer when you do good. You with me? And then the gathering, the accumulation is actually gathering or accumulating awareness or wisdom is knowing things just as they are. You practice that and you accumulate more and more wisdom. Now, the problem with this whole way of relating to things is it feels like you have these couple of spiritual bank accounts in the sky, and you make deposits and earn interest, and everything's great. But the way that I understand them is that they're both about accumulating momentum in this. And what you're saying here is that for you, you find that the practice of giving away things rubs your patterns more deeply. And so that may be the more effective practice for you. And generating that whole habit of goodness and openness and generosity, etc., etc. That's where the juice is in your practice.
I'm not thinking how meritorious it is.
I know you aren't. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it has that effect. You feel you can relate to that with some passion. Which is a really good thing, to be able to put our emotional energy into our practice. When it talks about regarding everything as emptiness, we say regarding in English, but that isn't really what is meant here. It means experiencing them as empty, which is a very, very powerful experience. But if you're just thinking that they're empty, that's just a concept. Yeah. Okay. Any other comments? Now, what difficulties did you have in experiencing this, in doing this practice? What difficulties did you encounter? None? Susan?
Maintaining sufficient attention and awareness to sustain it.
What happened in your practice?
Strong effort kept it there, and weakening energy let the pattern flow back in.
What were you fighting?
I just wrote it up to. I was fighting the pattern. I was like in the middle of it, and it feels like an ongoing process. It's not like it could be resolved in one meditative experience, that it has to be done over and over.
You're quite right. But what I'm interested in your experience here, is the... your use of strong effort. And it if I understood you correctly, it sounded like when you let the effort lapse a little bit, then something flooded in. So I'm wondering what you were trying to hold at bay.
Well, the pattern was pretty unpleasant.
Okay, so what were you fighting? Let me put it this way. Just do the practice right now. And in addition to doing this, experience the unpleasantness of the pattern. What happens?
The power and energy in the pattern is sometimes surges so that attention and awareness temporarily drop out.
Right. Okay. The pattern itself is another source of unpleasantness, right? Mm-hmm. What if you include that unpleasantness in the meditation?
Did.
And?
Well, it was very similar to what people were reporting in the beginning.
Something opens up?
Yeah, something opens. And,
yeah. Okay, so that's what I think you were keeping at bay, was the unpleasantness in the pattern itself.
Well, maybe I misdescribed the experience.
Okay.
It more has to do with when a high level of energy, in order to...
Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
Okay. Forget about everything that you're thinking. Just describe what you want in your own words. Forget about all the jargon. Yes, that's good. That's a good start.
To have the experience of the unpleasantness.
Is the other mic working? The other mic working.
Dissolving into open awareness, it is not something that I'm capable of sustaining. So the eventually the power of the pattern comes back in and grabs my attention.
Anybody want to take help Susan here? No, we have another mic, we hope. Yeah. Okay. Who wants to? No volunteers? Okay. You say the last sentence again. You sustain. You can't sustain.
I don't, for whatever reason, I was going to use energy.
Sure, fine,
I also
fine.
Used effort.
Right.
I haven't a sufficient level to power the to power sustained attention and awareness so that the pattern completely will go away forever.
Ah!
Well, I said I know it's a process, so I have to keep doing it over and over.
Okay. I knew there was something in here. Okay. Now does anybody want to work with Susan? Just made it a whole bunch clearer. Okay. What's the stumbling block here? Anybody?
Permanence.
Okay, here we go. You're on, Nava. Talk to Susan.
Something that you want here in this process?
In the process?
Something that you want? That you want?
Yeah, it's sort of a long-term goal. But to have a...
Can you hold the mic a little closer?
To be able to operate both on and off the cushion out of awareness more than I'm not.
How are you going to do that?
Practice, practice, practice.
Right. Right now.
Right.
Right now. How are you doing it?
Gosh. Well, hopefully
you listen to her.
Hopefully,
say it again, Nava.
How am I going to do it now?
Right now, what are you doing?
Trying to muster whatever level of attention and awareness I've already developed and operate out of that.
How does it feel?
Feels good.
Can you explain more? Can you talk more about it?
I'm in touch with some kind of deeper, more open sense of knowing.
Yeah.
Susan, what do you have to muster?
You want the first thing that popped into my mind?
Yeah, of course we do.
My wild and unruly mind.
Okay. Suppose you forget about mustering. Just forget about that completely. And just experience your wild and unruly mind. What happens? There it is, all over the place.
Well, since I know I'm experiencing it, then I'm not caught up in it, so there must be something else going on as well.
So what do you have to muster?
Nothing.
Now, this is a very, very... Thank you. You're doing really well. We're just a bit short on time. You're doing very, very well, Nava. And if you'd had more time... Pardon? No. You get the point? Yeah, okay. Now, this is a very important point, because it's easy, very, very easy for us. Leave it on. Yeah. It's very easy for us to get into this kind of struggle with experience. And we may think, oh, I'm accepting it here, but then there's another struggle going on here. And think, okay, well, I'll accept it here. Then we find that we struggle in there. And wherever the struggle is, that's where we have to move into the experience. And what we run into time and time again is, but that's not the direction that I want to go in. Maybe. But that's the direction of that the present experience is pointing to. Go ahead.
So where is my struggle that you're perceiving?
The struggle that I was sensing in you, I mean, you said it, so that the pattern will go away completely and never come back. Okay. Well...
What you say is going to happen someday.
Well, let me come back to that. Let me come back to that point, okay? But as somebody over here said, she has an agenda, okay? So you have this idea of how things are meant to be, and yet here is how things are, and you're going to make this push this. Well, that's effectively what you were doing. On a quite a subtle level. And this is what I mean. We do this on more and more subtle levels. So when you were using the language of mustering and coming up and, you know, being pushed out of attention by the forces, not having enough energy, I could feel the struggle you were engaged in. Well, now you move into the experience of that struggle, but I don't want to go there. I want to get rid of this. I'm sorry, that's what it is. Now, does that make sense to you?
It does, because I think I was experiencing it almost as a war between awareness and the pattern.
Exactly, that's right. And there isn't any war between awareness and the pattern. Now. I just want to close with your last. Didn't I say that it would all go away? Well, when did I say that? Okay.
In your book.
Not really. Let's distinguish between the effects of practice, or the results, I should be precise here, some of the results of practice and the intention of practice. The intention of practice is to be present in whatever is arising in experience, and to be able to experience it, as a friend of mine puts it, free from the projections of thought and emotion. Now, So what we're aiming is to develop a sufficient level of attention, of energy in the attention, so that we can actually experience whatever arises for what it is. It happens that the result of that is that the pattern disengages, as many of you have experienced over and over again. And sometimes, when we experience patterns very deeply, they just stop arising in the same way. But that's not the intention of the practice. And this is a very important point. If we make that the intention of the practice, then we get engaged in exactly the kind of struggle that you were describing, Susan. And so, and this is one of the challenging points. We keep having to come back to the intention of the practice, was, can I experience this? Can I experience this? In fact, that's how they approach it in the Theravadan tradition. Can I experience this? Can I experience this? Can I experience this? And there's no sense of changing it into something else. And taking and sending isn't to make everything nice. It's a way of experiencing this, whether it's, you know, great richness and everything's lovely and actually experiencing it, or you know, utter despair and illness and craziness and all of that stuff, and just experiencing that. And that's a very, very important distinction. And you find the same thing happening right in basic meditation. If you make the intention of the meditation to have a quiet mind, how well does it work? But if you make your intention and practice, I'm going to use the breath as a way to stay in the experience of whatever arises, then you find that the mind actually grows quiet. Why? Because you're not fighting experience. So wherever you find yourself fighting something, it means you've slipped into a subject-object framework. Necessarily, you can't fight. There isn't any fight when there is no subject-object framework. You follow? So, and this you're going to come across at level after level after level. So it's you know, and it always happens the same way. You know, we work through a level of practice, and then we find ourselves doing the same damn thing at the next level, and we have to learn it all over again. Okay, yeah.
So my mistake was, in a way, being goal oriented, and basically it's just cultivate awareness and experience what arises. And
yeah. Well, we do slip into this, so I don't even really want to call it a mistake. It happens. The principle that I'd like you to take from this is that whenever I find myself struggling, let me experience the struggle. And to give you, if you'll allow me, just to... in the first three-year retreat, well, in both three-year retreats, but I'm talking about the first one here, we had to do these very complex visualizations, yidam meditations. And we did three in a row, 3 months each. Five-deity Demchok practice, and then the five tantric deities, and then Vajrayogini. Well, one person in the retreat just hated these, because they're very complex. You know, you have 10 deities or 5 deities or 8 deities, and they're all doing, standing in different ways and in different colors, and you're trying to visualize yourself as all of this, and it's just like saying mantras and long liturgies, etc. It just goes on and on. So when we hit the third one, he said, to hell with this. And at the beginning of every meditation session, he would read through all the liturgy, and then he'd close his book, and he'd just sit in his box, his meditation box. Didn't say any of the mantras, didn't do any of the visualizations. And he said, of all the three meditations, those three big meditations, he said, he felt he had the closest connection with the third one. Why? He didn't fight what he was actually experiencing. No, I hate this. And so that was it. It looks totally unconvinced here.
He fought it to the point where he wouldn't do it. Isn't that really fighting it?
Yes, and then he let go. And in that opening, he actually formed a connection with that particular deity that he hadn't formed with the others. Okay? There's another story. It's Saraha, who's one of the great Indian masters. And I think it was Saraha. And he had meditated actually on the same deity for 3 years, day and night, and hadn't had so much as a good dream. And so he said, to hell with this, and he threw his rosary, his mala, down the toilet, which is like, really, don't do that in Tibet, in Indian Buddhism, like, it's the worst thing you could possibly do. And just said, to hell with this, and went to sleep. In the middle of the night, he had this vision of Vajrayogini holding his mala, giving it to him, and saying, you have to meditate without duality. Keep going. So there, he was doing exactly the same thing. He was struggling, but not experiencing. You know, he was struggling against this instead of just being right in the experience. That's what she meant. So hand to the back, mala. And but you can see it's the same process. When he gave up, he just let go, then all of that effort was just right there. She arises in his experience. So it's and the only way we learn this, actually, and I'm sorry, it is the only way. The only way we learn this is by doing the best we can until we literally can't go any further. And something lets go. No, you can't think, you can't plan this or strategize this. You just got to pour your attention in. So I'm sorry, you just got to do it that way. Okay, let's stop here then. We've already gone late. Thank you for your patience.